It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. As we've been hearing in our news, large parts of our economy have nearly ground to a halt, and we don't know how long that will last. This hour, we want to talk with Iowans, you, our listeners, whose lives have been upended by the pandemic. A little bit later in the program, we'll have some guidance for workers later in the program. The director of the University of Iowa Labor Center will join us. Also, Mark Schneider of Iowa State University will be with us. He's with their Center for Industrial Research and Service. He will come in on the end of giving advice, guidelines, what do I do now, sort of questions from a business perspective. So we want to hear from you this hour. Has your work as a worker, as someone who is employed, been upended by the COVID-19 pandemic? Have you lost your job, or have you had to adapt and find a new way of working or doing business? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Well, let's first of all talk with Toby Parks. Toby Parks is a Des Moines resident, she's based in Des Moines, owner of Station One Records. Perhaps you've heard of it. It's a not-for-profit label in Des Moines, also owner of XBK Live in Des Moines. It's a venue that opened in the fall. Toby Parks, I want to welcome you to our program. Are you there?
Hi, Ben.
Hi.
Thank you. Hi.
Very good. Thank you for joining us. Let's hear a little bit about your business. I want to mention here that IPR Studio One has started doing a lot of live events at your venue. That's a great partnership. Of course, that partnership not happening right now, as all venues are empty because of our distancing policy here. Tell us a little bit more about your two ventures quickly.
Yeah, so first, Station One Records. I am the executive director and founder of the organization, which is, we call it a record label, but it's more of a nonprofit artist development and entrepreneurship program. So we work with local musicians, both in Des Moines and generally central Iowa, providing some financial resources for recording and production and that kind of stuff, as well as business and legal resources. And then XBK is the 250-cap music venue that I opened in September, along with a couple of business partners, and we've been chugging along ever since.
Okay.
Until now.
Until now. That's the next question. What is the situation now for you and your businesses with the pandemic?
Well, right now, I mean, obviously, we are following the guidelines of what's been laid out by the state and local governments. We had initially anticipated staying closed following the Des Moines Public School District closing. So we had already anticipated being closed through April 13th. However, as things are progressing, you know, our business is entirely based on artist tours. We primarily book national touring acts. And, you know, we're being heavily affected by not only what's happening locally, but different types of closures that are happening in different parts of the region as well. Des Moines being centrally located between a few different major cities that artists stop and tour, say, between Minneapolis and St. Louis, we're being heavily affected by protocols that are in place there. I know St. Louis is on a two-month or an eight-week closure of bars and nightclubs. And so artists that were planning on, say, traveling from Minneapolis, stopping in Des Moines, and then hitting St. Louis, they're canceling their St. Louis date, so they definitely have to cancel with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're seeing this impact not only for the events that we had scheduled through the end of this month and through April, but we're now seeing cancellations into May and some even in early June.
Okay, as the owner of these two businesses, tell me, how many people rely on your businesses for an income?
XBK, we have 12 employees. Few of those are independent contractors, like our production people, sound people, lighting techs, and that kind of thing. And then we have a number of standard service industry workers, like bartenders and house staff. They're in a position right now where, you know, if we're not open and having shows, that they're not getting an income. We are hopeful of, you know, some of the supports that might be coming locally and from the federal government that we might be able to help them. We've also been passing along different resources that we're aware of and trying to keep our staff as informed as possible as to what options are available to them. But it is definitely very painful, and not only just from a financial perspective, but also, you know, everyone is, you know, this is very draining on, you know, people and their mental health as well. And so, you know, we're just really trying to stay in contact with everyone. You know, our staff is very much a family, and, you know, we're just trying to stay in contact and in communication and just making sure that everybody's okay, both financially and emotionally.
It sounds like, Toby, it sounds like you're doing a great job as a leader there. Looking after the employees there and having what are undoubtedly some really tough conversations, sick to your stomach, sleepless, I imagine, if not you, then others involved in your ventures there, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, as far as our business is going to goes, you know, the music business and particularly the live industry is an inherent business. So from, you know, our business side, we built in a lot of safeguards for us. So, you know, as XBK is an entity, you know, we're pretty confident we're going to make it through this. However, the folks that work for us, it's a little bit different of a situation. And so, you know, to me, the supports for our staff and, you know, trying to help them get through this stage is what is, you know, most forefront in my mind. And then also the independent artists that are coming through. I mean, there are a number of artists, not only the ones that, you know, we represent through Station One, but the ones that are touring through XBK, that their main livelihood comes from performing. And if they can't do that, they're not making money. And so, you know, the things that we're trying to do is encourage, you know, there's a lot of artists, I'm sure people have already noticed, doing live streams on, you know, Facebook and different platforms and, you know, including their Venmo and PayPal information there. As well, you know, we're really encouraging people to buy merch from independent artists, go to their websites and, you know, purchase t-shirts and CDs and that kind of thing, because, you know, as much as the businesses are hurting, we will have bailouts. The government has been very, you know, confident in being able to help us. But, you know, some of these folks, you know, for entertainment workers, there's not that same kind of safety net that's available to them.
Mm-hmm. What do you see in the weeks and months to come into the future? We don't know. It's uncertain how long this pandemic will last. Do you have contingency plans?
Yeah, I mean, right now we're really, you know, we're from the business side, you know, we're talking with our various lenders and the various banks and things that we work with and seeing what types of supports that we can get from that perspective. And, you know, we do have a reserve that, you know, can carry us through quite a long time. You know, in terms of, you know, the actual booking that's going to be happening at the venue, I mean, we're already rescheduling a lot of the shows that were supposed to be happening through March and April, and they're being rescheduled for late summer, early fall. So I think that, you know, we're going to be looking at a really good uptick in business, you know, provided we're able to unquarantine ourselves by the end of the summer. You know, so we're already starting to fill up our calendar for August, September, and October, mm-hmm. but it's going to be, you know, quite a stress until we get there. And it's, you know, from the label side of things for our artists, I mean, you know, a large part of the income that they have comes from festival season, which is happening, you know, through the summer. We had an artist that was scheduled to be at South by Southwest, and, you know, that's a huge part of an artist's, you know, sort of annual promotional campaign. And, you know, a lot of artists book their tours based on South by Southwest. And, you know, for that to be the first item to fall and then seeing every other summer festival or public gathering show to fall with it has been, you know, very disheartening.
Okay, Toby Parks, thank you for outlining your challenges ahead. And I have to applaud your positive attitude and the way you're managing that. I have to believe that your staff is in good hands, and we wish you all the best. Toby Parks, Des Moines-based owner of Station One Records, a not-for-profit label, also the owner of XBK Live in Des Moines. Toby, all the best, and something tells me we'll check back in a matter of weeks or months to see how this has progressed, hopefully in a positive way. Thanks, Toby.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. If you've just joined us, we're talking with Iowans who are living through especially difficult circumstances because of this pandemic. Iowans trying to cope with the crisis. Workers, also business owners. Let's go to Jen. Jen is joining us from Waverly, I believe. Jen Wolf, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. Thank you for joining us. You have you are an occupational therapist and a community organizer based in Waverly. Tell us more about what you do and your situation now.
Sure. I am a person with a disability. I use a wheelchair. And I think many of us in the disability community already social distance to a certain extent because not everything is accessible, including transportation. And so this isn't necessarily new for us. But what is new and what I've been organizing around for about the last year is the caregiver shortage in Iowa and how it's drastically impacting people who rely on long-term support services in Iowa.
So let's take you as an example. As someone with a disability, what health care do you provide need to be provided with on a daily or weekly basis that is being strained right now?
For me, I am very fortunate. I live with my parents who are still able to assist with the little bit I need because I'm a paraplegic. I'm able to transfer myself and do most of my self-cares. I just need help with, you know, heavy lifting, heavy cleaning things. But many of the friends and people that I work with and organize around have more complex physical needs and rely on daily care to get out of bed, to get dressed, to do meal prep, to help with toileting. And the caregiver shortage was an issue before this happened and now is dire. At least three people in the last week have had at least one day where they have not had care. That means they do not get out of bed, which means they're at higher risk for pressure sores. They're not getting adequate nutrition. They're not bathing. And they're at higher risk for getting coronavirus anyway. And so this is very concerning, and we've been trying to address this issue with government and DHS, and there are some legislators that have been very vocal on this issue and many who have denied that there's an issue. And we're just very concerned for this population. There is a gal in the Quad Cities who's just transitioned from a nursing home into community living, and she's going to have to go back to a nursing home because of the lack of caregivers, and that means she's at higher risk to get coronavirus and potentially have worse symptoms.
What about your work as an occupational therapist? How has that been impacted?
Again, this is different. I used to work in the medical model at a hospital, but I am working more in the community model now and organizing.
I see.
So it's changed.
I see. Okay. With these concerns, before we let you go, Jen Wolf, tell us, are you making headway? I mean, the story you tell there about people having to remain in bed for the entire day are unable because of a disability to leave their bed on their own. Are you making headway in solving this problem?
We are building a community of care. We are trying to reach out to these people, making sure they're okay. We are starting to do outreach through the Upgrade Medicaid Facebook page to connect people who may be unemployed temporarily to provide some level of care. With my occupational therapy connections, we've reached out to the American Occupational Therapy Association and to some other folks who are interested in trying to get occupational therapy students to perhaps fill that gap. We are working with United Spinal Association to tell those stories to federal legislators to help with funding. We've reached out to the Department of Human Services and waiting to hear. There's many things that are in action right now, trying to fill that gap in the meantime, in hopes that the new DHS Director Garcia has a plan for this in the future for systemic change.
Okay. Jen Wolf, thank you very much for joining us. Community organizer based in Waverly, obviously doing some very valuable work organizing and She, as a also a person with a disability, looking after others in similar situations. Jen, thank you for outlining your challenges, and we wish you the best of luck on them.
Thank you, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, really skipping through these profiles, and you just have to wonder how many profiles there are of the individuals trying to cope with this pandemic. If you are finding it just a minor annoyance or a little different work situation, you should count yourself lucky, because today we are hearing from Iowans living through an especially difficult circumstances, as you've heard in the first two examples. Before the end of this hour, let's turn to our next guest. Jennifer Shearer is with us, director of the University of Iowa Labor Center. Jennifer, welcome to our program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on. Briefly describe the work of the Labor Center you direct.
Yeah, the Labor Center is part of the University of Iowa. We're the only labor center in the region system. And so we have a statewide mission to provide education, research, and resources on work and labor issues to Iowans.
I have to believe there are plenty of those issues that have popped up in the last few days. What has it been like?
Absolutely. I think I want to start just by expressing my admiration and support for just the hundreds and thousands of frontline workers who are still in triage mode, figuring out how to continue doing their jobs, some of which are absolutely essential services that have to keep our economy and society running right now. And the labor leaders and community leaders who are trying to come up with solutions to really challenging problems on the fly right now.
So tell us, give us a sense, Jennifer, of the common problems people are getting in touch with your labor center about.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing are people on two ends of a really broad spectrum. On one end of the spectrum are examples like some of the ones we've already heard on your program today. People whose income has suddenly completely evaporated, right? So out of work, no income, immediate crisis. And so what we're trying to help people work through is what are the options for seeking unemployment benefits, for one thing. We've got localities that are already pursuing and in some cases implementing moratoriums on utility shutoffs or evictions to try to prevent a secondary crisis of homelessness and public health problems that come later. And we have seen, I think, some really good news come out in the last week about expansion of access to unemployment benefits in our state. Many states are taking the option that is available to them to do things like waive the work search requirements right now to make sure that people affected by exposure to the virus or self-quarantine due to exposure concerns can go to Iowa Workforce Development. I highly recommend people looking up the guidance on who's eligible for unemployment benefits right now, because our state is taking some steps, some initial steps to expand that access.
Right. And also, just to reinforce that, Jennifer, a good place to start, and we had hoped or originally planned to have the deputy director of the workforce, Iowa Workforce Development here, but that website it has a lot of questions answered. iowaworkforcedevelopment.gov is a place you can direct people. Where else?
Absolutely. And I think on the other end of the spectrum, we have people who are not out of work. They are being asked to work increasing hours because of the demands of whatever occupation they're in right now, and they're being put in situations where they're facing really high exposure and potentially high risk. And so, what we're trying to offer people at that end of the spectrum is a reminder of what are the existing rights that workers had even prior to this crisis, and what is the guidance coming out of federal and state agencies for how employers can try to mitigate those exposures and those risks as much as possible. So we do have many proactive employers that are trying to take steps in that direction, and I think we should applaud them. We're also hearing from people who are in workplaces where we're behind the curve, right? And so I think what we're advising people is if you're working somewhere where precautions are not being implemented and you and your coworkers know that you're not safe, I don't think any of us feel like we have time to wait another, 24 hours or 72 hours or 2 weeks or whatever the timeline would be. So, people have the certainly have the legally protected right to get together with a group of their coworkers, review what their legal rights are and take some proactive proposals to their employers. And I think if you're in a unionized workplace, you've got the ability to propose and hopefully negotiate some policy changes on an immediate emergency basis. And even if you're not, you know, take a group of people, try to put your heads together and figure out what best practices would be. There's excellent guidance coming out from federal OSHA. People can review what that guidance is. OSHA is the agency that is in place to set guidelines for healthy and safe workplaces. And people should be looking for immediate ways to limit their exposures, create distance if possible, remote work if possible, step up sanitation procedures if possible. And as a last resort, for people who have to be on the front lines, provide the best possible personal protective equipment that's available right now.
Jennifer Shearer is director of the University of Iowa Labor Center. Hang on there. We're almost up to the end of this segment, but I wanted to add Nicole to our conversation. Jennifer, Nicole, welcome to our program. Where are you calling from?
I'm actually driving through Iowa right now to sell a business asset in Missouri.
Okay, tell us your angle on this pandemic and the aftermath of the crisis it's causing in so many lives.
Well, I heard the first caller, Toby, and I am one of those people that is an entertainment worker. I have been out of work for 3 weeks. I work primarily in corporate events instead of concerts, and people started canceling their business meetings weeks ago. I'm self-employed. And I have absolutely no recourse whatsoever through proper means to earn any sort of a living now. And everything's gone.
Nicole, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're coming to the end of this segment in a few seconds. Sure. What is your plan? What is your outlook?
I'm selling everything I own as fast as humanly possible because I can't get unemployment.
And then what?
I don't know. Pray to God the work comes back.
Okay, Nicole.
That's it.
Thank you for calling. A tough situation, Nicole, driving through Iowa right now. Jennifer Shearer, thank you very much. Perhaps before we go to break and say goodbye to you, Jennifer, we mentioned iowaworkforcedevelopment.gov is a great place online for people to get resources. How do people get in touch with the University of Iowa Labor Center? Jennifer, are you still there? Yep, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't click the exact right button there, but now you're on, Jennifer.
Okay. Yeah, our email address is labor-center@uiowa.edu. We do have an Iowa Worker Rights Manual that's available on our website. If you Google Iowa Worker Rights Manual, that should come up. It outlines some of these provisions. And the other thing I'll say is new provisions are... being passed right now, and okay. We're just learning about what kinds of leave options people may have under the new laws.
Very good. Jennifer Shearer, Director of the University of Iowa Labor Center, thank you so much. We continue our conversation when we return. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, we see the economic toll today of this virus has come into some sharper focus as the Labor Department, the U.S. Labor Department, reported one of the largest one-week spikes in unemployment on record. Some 281,000 Americans filed first-time claims for unemployment insurance. This is up by 33% from the week before, and I'm sure that is just the beginning of our unemployment. We're talking with Iowans who are living through especially difficult circumstances this hour. Iowans trying to cope with their changing work situation. Some have lost work. Some are business owners who are having to deal with a sudden drop-off in revenue. If you'd like to join our conversation, has your work or your business been upended by the COVID-19 pandemic? Have you lost your job? 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river@iowapublicradio.org. In the first half hour, we had some advice about their rights for workers from the director of the University of Iowa Labor Center. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking with the project manager at ISU's Center for Industrial Research and Service. He'll be giving us some advice for businesses. So if you're a business owner, stay tuned for that conversation coming up in a few minutes. Let's go back to our phones and get some more samples of people having to deal with dire circumstances. Sam Farrell is on the line, I believe. Sam, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about your situation. I see you're a bartender in Iowa City.
That is correct. I am a bartender at a restaurant. It is a bar and restaurant. And earlier this week, I guess it was Monday night, we got the word that we were moving to a to-go only situation, which is essentially where they can only put on full-time employees to help with that. And then everybody else is pretty much temporarily out of work.
So how many, guessing, if you may not have the data, but about how many people are impacted just at when you're at your one restaurant?
I would say at least 20 people, between 20 and 25.
Okay. What are the conversations like when you heard that news with you and your coworkers?
I really didn't speak with any of them. I was actually fortunate to be around a number of friends from other restaurants, actually, at the time when I got word. And we all just kind of, well, we're in the same situation here. And like myself and so many others, you know, here in the city, we're all kind of feeling that sting. And so we're kind of, in a way, all feeling at the same time. And there's really not much that we can do. So we're just kind of like, you know, let's buckle up and just kind of see what happens.
Okay. So what happens? What kind of, I'm sure you're thinking, you're planning, making a contingency plan. What is your plan? What have you done thus far?
Thus far, I have, like the 281,000, I think you said, people that have filed for unemployment. I have done that for the first time. There's also a few grants going around that are bartender associated. There's one that's called BEAP. I'm not sure what that stands for exactly. But essentially, it's a relief program for bartenders all over the country. I have filed for one of their grants as well. And there's a few other kind of miscellaneous programs. I think there was one today that was kind of tip-based. That's essentially just a system for getting people that require tips to survive, essentially. It's a website that can donate to your Venmo account anonymously, or you know, if they want to be specified, obviously. But so there's little funds like that around, other than that, it's kind of just biding our time.
Right. Sam, have you ever been in this situation before, having to apply for unemployment?
This is the very first time.
Yeah. What is your challenge as you experience to keep in a healthy, positive state of mind? Has that been difficult with this shock, as it has been for so many others?
Yes and no. I think that you know, I do tend to stay positive. I try my best to stay positive no matter what. This is definitely testing that. You know, because being out of work is something that I myself have not experienced in this way. But, you know, because we work in this industry and because there's really not much we can do as far as applying other places, you know, it's just kind of supporting one another, getting support from your family, getting support from your friends, looking for odd jobs around town if they happen to arise. I know that a few of my past employers have reached out and have, you know, said if I need to pick up some shifts there. And I'm not sure if that's what other people have experienced too. I've just been very fortunate in that. And really, it's just kind of, like I said, biding time until things can reopen. And if that's 2 weeks, if that's a month, if that's several months, we're not really sure. So it's kind of just being as positive as possible and hope for the best.
Okay. We are hoping right along with you, Sam, a 25-year-old bartender in Iowa City, now unemployed. We appreciate you sharing your story with us, Sam.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking with Iowans who are currently living through especially difficult circumstances, and there are plenty of you out there. Let's go to Josie O'Connor Miller. If I got your name right, Josie, welcome to the program. I hope I did.
Hi, Ben. You did get my name right.
Very good. So you are entering the workforce. I see you're a college student. You're a senior at Cornell College in Mount Vernon, but you're a Des Moines resident, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So take us back to where you were in your senior year and your plans before this pandemic hit.
I was preparing to present my thesis research at a conference in April. I was planning birthday celebrations with friends on campus. I was thinking about applying for jobs in a bunch of different places, just thinking about where I was going to move, where I was going to go, what my next plans, like were, and now that's all kind of on pause.
Right. You're a major in political science, looking at I'm sure coming out of Cornell College, looking at a great future with the quality education and prestige of that college in your pocket. When did you find out what happened when the pandemic really set in to your future, to your plans?
I think because Cornell's campus is so small, we're really insulated sometimes. I don't think anybody there was really thinking about what that was going to look like for colleges or for us especially. And then last Wednesday, about a week ago, we were all on spring break and we got an email saying that the school was rethinking their policy surrounding COVID-19, and that we'd get an email the next day telling us what they're going to do. And then the next day they told us we all needed to be off campus by the 18th. And they're moving classes to an online format, and that, you know, we're going to hear more going forward about whether that would be extended for the rest of the year, what the rest of the year was going to look like. Now we have heard that the rest of the year is going to be online. Commencement is canceled. So, like, everything's just changed very quickly.
Yeah, I can hear in your voice it's been tough. What's been the toughest part for you? There is a future out there for you, Josie. Don't worry. There are a lot of people who have their futures shaken up, rattled right now. You will find a way, Josie. But tell us, what are your plans now?
Well, I'm really lucky. I was able to come back to Des Moines. It was just a short drive, and I, you know, have a place to stay, food to eat. My people are all safe and protected, and so I feel really lucky in that sense. But I'm just really worried about friends and other people who have lost campus jobs that they relied on, who've lost housing, who don't know what those next steps are. You know, I can wait it out here at home. I have that opportunity. I have that chance. So whatever comes next, I feel pretty confident in what I'll be doing. But, you know, I worry about other people and other college students who aren't as secure in their home lives or in their financial situations, and just, you know, everybody's having a hard time with all these changes.
Indeed. Josie O'Connor Miller, thank you for joining us. And tell us your situation. We want to congratulate you in advance on your getting your diploma from Cornell College. I'm sorry, no commencement for you and so many other graduates this spring. We wish you nonetheless all the best of luck, Josie. It's going to turn out just fine. We know it.
Thank you so much.
River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. So many stories out there, individual stories. We could only capture a few of them this hour. We do want to look at the business end of this equation, this major shakeup in our economy. Let's talk with Mark Schneider. He's a project manager at Iowa State University's Center for Industrial Research and Service. Mark, welcome back to the program. We didn't realize that you would be on so quickly, but welcome back. Thank you for making time for us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Let's walk through. There are undoubtedly many business owners listening to your voice right now. Let's walk through some information that you've put together there at Iowa State University's Center for Industrial Research and Service for business. What is the first thing to think about when faced with this pandemic as a business owner?
Probably the first thing for businesses to think about is just kind of getting a handle as to what the situation is and understanding the risk and how it affects your business, so they can then create an appropriate plan to deal with the situation, mitigate the risk, and be able to continue their operation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then after you've informed yourself, you understand your risk. For instance, risk, what would be typical areas of risk that would be common?
With infectious disease outbreak like we're facing now, one of the key things for them to look at is how they manage their staff, visitor, and travel policies. So how are they limiting or understanding where their visitors are coming from, travel with their staff, limiting travel with their staff to affected areas and whatnot. Then they also want to take a look at how can they keep their own employees safe. So providing some education to their employees about best practices in sanitation and hygiene, how those would apply to their facility, and what employees should do, you know, where employees can go for information. So the company should play some role in helping provide some of the information to their staff as well. And then probably the biggest thing companies can do is just communicate. So communicate with their staff, with what they're doing, what the plans are, communicate with their suppliers, with their customers, and local government authorities as well.
Mm-hmm. Communication is a big part of what, as business owner organizations here at Iowa Public Radio, we've had to reorganize our communication. We do not have any more guests in our studios. We, as hosts and producers, are spending much less time together, working from our homes, trying to maintain that social distancing. What else can you tell us about how to approach communication in a way that doesn't spread this virus?
From the communications perspective,
yes.
I think it's just to be very important to make sure you're dealing with facts. What a company can do to help that is to help gather information, is designate someone at the company who's going to be responsible for trying to keep on top of what's going on, to kind of sift through the facts versus rumors, and then tailor their communication to their employees and to their customers and whatnot, letting them know what they're doing and not kind of just relying as to rumors or chasing rumors out in the market.
Mm-hmm. Businesses often rely on supplies and a supply chain, and that's been totally disrupted in this pandemic. What advice do you have for a business that really can't get supplies as it did?
They need to be able to, again, understand how they're impacted, communicate with their suppliers, see what their options are. They can always turn to folks like us at Cirrus to kind of help them source alternative suppliers if there are any like those. But the best bet, you know, is hindsight being 2020, is to make sure you have a plan in place to kind of be able to mitigate this and deal with the problems in the future. Obviously, if they're stuck in this already, there's more limited options that they can do. But the best, again, is just to communicate with suppliers, understand what's out there, and reach out for help.
Mark Schneider is with us, project manager of Iowa State University's Center for Industrial Research and Service. We'd like to have you join us if you have a minute to call. You're a business owner. Let us know what your situation is. Perhaps you have a question for Mark Schneider, and he could give you a tip or a bit of advice. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or river to river at iowapublicradio.org. What other aspects are you finding businesses need at such a time of crisis?
We've found with the spread of COVID-19 here to the States, Iowa specifically, a lot of businesses are coming to us asking questions about best practices for how they can protect their staff. If they were to have an infection, how would they clean their facility? And how to kind of stay on top of things. So those are some of the things we're working with companies on to help them understand what's recommended by the CDC and what they can do from their side to be the best prepared that they could be.
Mm-hmm. Go into a little bit more detail about how to protect staff as a business owner. For instance, if you hear in the business that there's been a COVID-19 exposure at your business.
Correct. What they can do is to understand where that exposure took place, what areas of facility were impacted, what staff were impacted. And the first thing they should do is, if that person is still on site, is to separate them from the rest of their employees and then send them home out of the facility, provide them with some of the resources as to how they can follow up and get care. And there's good resources, again, from the CDC and the Iowa Department of Public Health in regards to that. And then probably the best thing they can do is, especially if it's a more widespread exposure, is probably to send the rest of their staff home, shut down the facility for a couple of days, and then consider doing a thorough environmental cleaning of their site.
Mm-hmm. So much, as you said a little bit earlier, we've got to depend on facts, not something you happen to hear in social media. Make sure it's fact-based. Have you encountered some misinformation out there, seen some misinformation that would steer people in a really wrong direction?
A few. There's, you know, people with a lack of information or clarity as to how severe this outbreak is, how long it will go on. There's been some issues. We've had, a few companies, ask us again about what type of personal protective equipment might be needed when they clean their facility, and it's ranged from none to having kind of the full protective body suits for cleaning. So this is where, you know, we're trying to step in and provide them with some of the best practices as to the type of PPE equipment that's required. And it's not as severe as one might think, but it's also you need to make sure you take the proper steps to protect your employees who are doing that cleaning.
Okay, Mark, stay with us. I'm going to let's have Jonathan join our conversation. Jonathan, calling from Dubuque, coming toward the end of our program. Jonathan, what's your angle? How have you been impacted?
As a small business owner, my concern is the statement that the Iowa official had a moment ago regarding a lack of tests and being able to get a positive diagnosis for the coronavirus or COVID-19, and how that correlates in with the federal benefits. So if someone was to be laid off and they're being told no test is available, your symptoms may be minor, how can I best guide my staff and protect them if a layoff is imminent to be getting these benefits if we're seeing or hearing that there's a lack of tests that would be needed to basically collaborate that diagnosis?
Okay, Jonathan, thank you very much. Let's go back to Mark Schneider. Mark, I'm trying to get you back on the phone here. Can't seem to connect with you. This is Mark there? Mark is not. Mark, there you
Hello?
Are.
Hello, yes?
Yes, Mark, go ahead. I hope you heard the question from Jonathan in Dubuque.
I did. I'm not sure if I have a really great answer, though. I mean, the best bet is to reach out to the local officials, the Iowa Department of Public Health and Iowa Workforce and whatnot, and see how they can provide support. I mean, end of the day, the first thing a company needs to do is make sure you're protecting your employees, and if the right decision is that they should be sent home or not, the company's not available having work for them to do. Every company's economic situation is different, but obviously the more flexible we can be with our staff, providing them with a salary, even though they're at home, if that's possible, those types of steps. But in terms of what they can do in terms of the government and aid and those things like that, we'll probably have to take that up with those government agencies that work in those areas.
Mm-hmm. Mark Schneider, in the final 2 minutes that we have here, tell us a little bit about what you're seeing in the future for your preparedness. You'll have businesses depend on you for best practices as we go forward in this new environment. They're at the Center for Industrial Research and Service at the Iowa State University. What contingencies are you looking at? I mean, how long could we be facing this? We don't know, but we can plan for it, right?
Correct. It's very hard to say how long. If you were to ask me this question a week ago, it would be a different answer, perhaps. But I think, hope for the best and plan for the worst. I going off of school closures and some of the other steps folks have taken, it seems like there's probably a 4 to 8 week window out there that will have these disruptions to supply chains, disruptions to workforce being available at companies and how the economy is working. So if I was running a business, that's kind of the time frame I would start with, and then prepare to be flexible and adapt your plans as things change.
Okay, Mark Schneider, remind us the best places to go as a business owner. How do people get in touch with you there at Iowa State for some advice?
Yep, they can go to our website, and we have a COVID-19 page there. So it's CIRAS, CIRAS.iastate.edu. And on our homepage, they'll find the banner with COVID-19. They can click on that, and there's a list of resources, both from the federal and state side, as well as information of how you can contact us for additional help or assistance.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark Schneider, Project Manager at Iowa State University's Center for Industrial Research and Service. Well, we've had quite an hour of listening to people in need, people adapting, people having a positive attitude. And thanks for all those calls and for our guests. Dennis Reese, it's been sort of inspirational at the same time that it's been distressing. I think you probably have the same reaction that I do.
Well, yeah, absolutely, Ben, absolutely.
We have some weather coming in this weekend
to
certain parts of Iowa. Maybe you can recap that as we finish up the hour.
Well, there is a winter weather advisory for northwest Iowa. That includes Sioux City, Spencer, Estherville, Algona, quite a few counties, actually. Weather up there is going to be pretty nasty here later today. That advisory in effect from 7 p.m. Today through 7 a.m. tomorrow. Rain transitioning to a wintry mix, up to 2 inches of snow. And then winds gusting to up to 40 miles per hour, the Weather Service says. Those winds may create blowing and drifting snow, and then rapidly falling temperatures, temperatures dropping to below 20 degrees, Ben. So it's kind of a strange weather day. Then in the south, temperatures could hit 72, 73 degrees this afternoon with severe thunderstorms moving in later.
Look out, a big weather weekend or a few days coming at us. River to River is, thank you, Dennis. River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us today.